Well, good afternoon. Today on the podcast, I have got Maggie Nguyen joining me, who is the owner and talent behind the Brisbane institution that is Cafe Oh My. Now, I am a pretty regular customer, and that would certainly be how I got to know you. Would be because, well, number one, I can't pronounce your main dish, and I say it like a bogan Australian. So I come in for a bowl of pho, which I understand is very poorly pronounced. Fur.
Yes, correct. Fur.
Fur. I'm working on this because, again, my Australian is pretty heavy. But, oh, man, you guys do. Like, just the most beautiful food. And there's a lot of people, if you know Cafe Oh My, yeah, they go, oh, yeah, that's my favourite. So, Maggie, I'm really, really delighted that you've come to join me. Do you want to share just a little bit about what Cafe Oh My is?
Wow. That's a really broad question.
Well, it is. And, okay, maybe you can't answer that straight away. So what we might do is we might start back at the beginning. Do you reckon we can do that?
Yeah.
We'll go back because I'd like to know about how you came to start this wonderful place and how it all came about. So now I understand that your mother came to Australia, so before you were born, but essentially fled Vietnam.
Yeah, so my parents fled Vietnam in 1982, and at the time she was 3 months pregnant with me. And in that voyage, I was in utero. Yeah, and it's like I just can't imagine what kind of experience she had while she was like escaping Vietnam.
Because I mean, that's it's wild, and I've tried to understand a little bit of the story as much as I could before you came to join me. But how did she come to be on a boat on her way to Australia? How did that even happen?
So my parents lived in Bung Thao, which is like a coastal town 2 hours away from Ho Chi Minh, Saigon. And my uncles built a boat before they fled, and that was in around 82, 81. And the boat fit about 35 people, and it was a small boat.
Wow. So they yeah. physically built this, and I assume you'd have to build this in secret.
Yes, of course. So they had a fishing license, so that was their way of like saying like they were legitimate.
It's yeah. it's for work.
Yes.
See the rod holders, it's totally a fishing boat.
Yeah.
Wow. So they have manufactured that sort of under the guise of work.
Yeah.
To get so family to boat. So were there that many people on that vessel?
Half of my family were on that boat. So they split it up. So my grandpa went with my mum on that trip, and my grandma stayed back. So I can't really remember the details.
No.
Yeah.
No, I shouldn't be talking from your specific perspective at that point in time. But that's pretty terrifying. And if I picked it up correctly, it took about 5 days.
Which is pretty quick.
That's what I thought. I'm like, that's pretty fast.
Yes, they were one of the lucky boats. Because not many boats actually go to, like, they sometimes during the voyage they might encounter pirates or a really bad storm.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. Do you know, like, they have the motors or the sails? Do you even know what that is?
Mm.
No? Because, yeah, I was obviously thinking this overnight, like, as a kid lucky enough to grow up in Australia, I've never had to fight those sort of battles. And I guess, the context might be fleeing. Country.
Yeah. It's pretty deep and it's beyond all the luxuries we have as a first world problem and stuff. Like,
yeah. That's anyone I ever see that complains about Australia or how tough it is here. I'm like, mate, I don't think you have perspective on what tough looks like. Tough is moving half your family in a boat that built in secret.
Yeah.
Across the ocean, to escape. That's a hell of a thing. And when they got here, do you know what happened next?
So my parents land in Malaysia, and they were in the refugee camp for 3 months. And then after that, it was either Australian government or America. And my grandfather luckily chose Australia.
I think that was a pretty good, pretty good outcome.
Good choice.
Good choice. Panned out okay.
Yeah.
Did they explain why? Was there one way over the other?
I'm not quite sure. I never really asked it.
Yeah. Just, I think it's sort of because, you know, like, land of the free, home of the brave, you know, there's a lot of rah-rah coming out of there, whereas Australia back then was, you know, should be right, mate. so, yeah, it's just, I guess I'm fascinated by why you made it to court.
I should ask one of my uncles that.
Mm. Yeah, to go, what tipped the scales? You know, they've got Hollywood and they've got the big banana. So, you know. they're probably not things you're thinking about when you're fleeing for your life. Yeah, they're probably pretty happy there. Yeah.
And then after that, they went to Sydney.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So set up in Sydney.
Yes.
And did they get support from the Australian government? Like, how did that?
Yeah, it was pretty supportive back then. Like, so they were in the Endeavour Refuge.
Yeah. Right.
That, I can't remember whereabouts it was, but it's on the around the beach area, where it's really, really like expensive now.
Fantastic. Nice work, Australian immigration. That's a
blue chip location.
Okay, so they came in and got supported in Sydney. Obviously didn't stay in Sydney, but were they there for...
Yeah, no, I was born and raised there.
Right.
Yeah. So my parents probably lived around Marrickville and they slowly just moved west.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So moved away, wasn't... And sort of what drew them out?
I think it's just affordability.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then closer to the Vietnamese community.
Okay,
Thangstown, and then went to Cabramatta.
So there was a strong sense of community there.
Yeah.
So a lot of people that have also fled, or that was sort of the main makeup.
Yeah, a lot of Vietnamese tend to live out like, Cabramatta or Thangstown.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up in Sydney, so educated. In Sydney?
Yeah.
And how did you find schooling in Australia?
I mean, I did go to a school with a lot of Vietnamese kids. So that, I guess I was, felt all right. I didn't feel out of place.
Oh, that's lovely. So yeah. that was a nice experience.
Yeah.
Coming through. Because, again, Australia in the 80s, yeah.
I know, but there are times when we did go to road trips and we got called different names.
Yeah.
Up north.
Up north.
Like
up
Queensland.
The rednecks are. Mate, they're a bit slower. we are often considered. Yeah. Back in Australia, sometimes. I don't know if it's here. And so you grew up in Sydney, so what age? You know, did you sort of do further education down there? Did you specialise?
Yeah, so after school, I chose chiropractic because I got the marks, I guess, and it was just to really fulfil my parents' desires for me to have a degree because they couldn't get one. And
why chiropractic? I mean, there's a lot of degrees.
So that's random.
Yeah, like you thought, man, I'm just going to crack people.
Yeah. Well, I was actually working at a chiropractic clinic in high school, so I was kind of persuaded by my boss.
So your folks were like, come on. And, okay, and so you sort of found yourself surrounded by, well, it's not that bad, I've got to choose something.
Yeah.
And you went, that'll do?
Yeah. I just kind of went into it, you know. Like, I think at 18, you don't really know what the hell you want to do. Like, you're calling, you can change.
Did you have any insight at that point in time?
I wanted to do arts degree. Like, my mum was like, what? What are you going to be?
That's awesome. So what sort of art? Like, what was the, what style of art?
I don't even know. I wasn't really clear because I didn't even get to delve into it because.
So you just wanted to make stuff?
Yeah, or be creative.
Be creative.
Yeah, that was more me.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah. See, that, and that makes more sense. And again, you know, knowing you now, I could imagine that as somebody that likes to create. Okay, so you missed that because that would have been very disappointing for your folks to go, thanks for this fantastic new life. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. So you went into chiropractic study. Obviously not what you've done with the rest of your journey, but talk to me about that. Talk to me about going through uni and becoming
chiropractic. Yeah, it was interesting. Like, I think I felt more out of place when I was in uni in chiropractic because there was a lot more Anglo people, I guess. Like, it wasn't a very Asian focused degree. There wasn't hardly any Vietnamese people doing a degree like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else? Yeah, like, I practiced for 4 years and then I felt this isn't really me. It wasn't my calling.
But did you work for somebody else's practice or did you have private practice or
I was just a contractor. Yeah.
So you sort of never really went all into it.
Yeah.
Even when you talk about it now, I can see your expression and you're like, whatever. it does not spark any flame in you whatsoever, does it?
Well, I didn't really believe in it. So, and then most of the time when I was adjusting my patients, I was kind of thinking about my next thing, you know, like, that quaint corner cafe kind of thing that I was going to create.
So that was all you could think while you were aligning the neck.
Yeah.
you could imagine, and the cooking, because I've seen that that's obviously something that is I guess ingrained in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Was there always that the love of cooking, or did that grow over time?
Well, at family gatherings, it's very food focused. Yeah, always, and I got to see my grandma cooking as an early age, like really small toddler. And I was always really curious and I wanted to help. And half the time she'd be like shooing us because we didn't do it right. Typical grandma.
Sounds about right. Do it right.
My
way or the highway.
Yeah. And my mum's really passionate about cooking as well. So I got it from them.
So did they let you in a little bit when you got a little bit older? When were you allowed to sort of assist in the kitchen?
About eight? Yeah.
So that was sort of the age where you were doing it, where it wasn't so bad that they were irritated.
Yeah, 8. Yeah. And what else? Just my grandfather used to like buy fresh like live ducks from the farm. And then the whole art of like killing it and plucking its feathers, we were part of that.
So we weren't just going to Woolies
and
getting them off the rack. See, that is a much more involved process, much more, you know, connected with what you're making.
Yes.
You know, and there's a much deeper understanding of where it's coming from.
Like appreciation as well.
Absolutely.
Well, I find like with kids, like if you get them involved and they actually be a part of the process, they actually
want to
eat it.
Well, that's it. They can see, and I've had the same experience with my son, but he has just always loved, I quite enjoy, you know, ripping a few things up, and he has, you know, he'll bring his little step into the kitchen because he's not tall enough.
Yes.
And he'll climb up there and, you know, get the what can I do, and, you know, wants to stare and taste and try. And, it's actually a really lovely thing. And, okay, so you were invited into that around 8 years of age.
Yeah.
What if they let you do at that stage?
It's mainly prepping.
Mainly prepping.
Yeah.
So you've got to pay your dues.
Yeah.
Really get in there.
Yeah, but that's how you learn, from doing all the easy steps, like cleaning, washing vegetables or something, or slicing carrots, or, yeah, cleaning beans.
And did you get to use the sharp knives?
Yeah, slowly, yeah.
I'm just imagining the game. And what sort of dishes did you really enjoy making at that time? When, you know, what were the ones that fascinated you?
Oh, I think soups. My mum used to always do broths, like chicken broths and stuff, and the whole process of skimming all the impurities, I find it pretty relaxing. It's like baking.
It's a process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Enjoying that journey and the smells of the time.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And you sort of, was it something that you really just did for families, or did you sort of cook a lot for yourself? Or what was sort of the attraction there?
Yeah, I think it's a form of love. Like, my parents, I mean, my mom, like when I grew up, she hardly ever said I love you or something, but it's mainly through food. Like, have you eaten today? are you hungry? And that's how they showed that they cared. Yeah. Yeah, you don't hear many Vietnamese people asking how are you when they meet you. They're just like, come on, sit down, eat, and then we can talk afterwards, because we'll be full by then.
Much more relaxed, much happier.
Yeah.
Sounds right. I wonder if we get along. So you're a chiropractor. I'm going to jump back forward in time. You're a chiropractor. They're adjusting people. I've recently started doing some chiropractic work, so I at least understand a little bit about how that process goes. So I'm thoroughly interested in that. So while you were doing that process, which actually makes me a bit nervous, how did that progress from treating patients to then going, I really want to cook?
I think something happens at 27. So that's when I'm going to change.
Just snap.
Snap. Like,
this is not the path.
Yeah. So I left Sydney to go to Brisbane at 27, and then I opened a restaurant in the valley with my brother, Leighton, who owns Ferg Hugh next door and Red Lotus. And it was really like a learning curve, that first restaurant. I had no idea what I was doing. Nothing, zero. No hospitality knowledge at all.
Now, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
So you've decided to go into business with your brother.
Mm. Yep.
So family business.
Yes.
Again, always a bold choice.
Yes.
You have decided to leave home, like, or, you know, the area where your family is.
Yeah.
You've chosen Brisbane as the place to go, and then Fortitude Valley is, you've got to unpack a little bit of this. How did this process come together?
Sometimes those processes just happen. And it's just by you saying yes.
And was there a discussion that you sort of went to your brother, I'm thinking about doing this thing, what do you reckon?
He was up here already. And I think it was a lot of him convincing as well.
Sounds like it. If he was already here, again, this is pretty good.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, the location he chose was pretty shit. Yes. So it was Chinatown Mall.
Right.
And the rent was incredible.
That would have been. That is not.
Not a cool spot. Like, it was.
So it was driving as your vibe.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't me. That's why.
I felt so weird.
I was out of place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't really celebrated for what I, you know, like, what we offered. Yeah, it was a bit of a waste.
What was the duration that you were there?
I was there probably a year and a half, and then I I kind of left. I was like, this is a thing. But my brother kept it going, and luckily he sold it in time.
And when was this one?
2011. Yeah, 10, 11.
That sort of time. So first restaurant with your brother. And how did that go working with your brother? Obviously not terribly.
Challenging working with family. But you know, there's a tolerance with family that isn't there with friends. Because normally friends would be like, can I even swear?
Mate, let her rip. Let her rip. Potty mouth is okay. But yeah, I get that. There is a, because oddly enough, my brother is my business partner.
Yeah.
You know, 14 years we've worked together and still like working together, enjoy each other's company,
yeah,
want to murder each other. There is a very, you know, there is a strong understanding.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah, it's the same with me and my mum and I.
Because, yeah, you got the full family business.
Yes.
My folks are like, yeah. So you've had the business there in Chinatown, and you sort of said that it was a bit of eye opening for you. And you're also enjoying this series of switch roles at times of the headlines going through. So if you're in your car at the moment, that's not the first thing to get out of the way. That's just what happens when you record a show at Sheldon's Corner. Anyway, slightly off topic. So it was reasonably brutal starting a restaurant. What were the things that really slapped you in the face when you first started? Can you narrow it down?
The hours? Yeah. I'm pretty committed to it. Yeah.
You have to be. That's it. That's the whole game. It's going to go one of two ways. It's going to work or it's not. And you're the deciding factor.
Yep. And staffing is a tricky one. Like, it's one of those, hospitality. Like, you rely on a lot of people to make it work.
Yeah. I've always looked at a restaurant business. I admire the complexity because, you know, you've got to do a great job every day, every hour, every service, every place, every time, you know, particularly in this day and age, where people can be a bit, you know, they can certainly have their point known. Whereas, you know, if I had an off day, probably not as many people will notice.
Yeah.
And I really think that pressure, you know, if you're not loving where you are, that would really get tiring very quickly.
Yeah. There's a lot of, what is it? How do we explain it? A lot of inner voice kind of mantras going on, like for resilience.
like what? What do you say to yourself when you think I shouldn't be doing it?
Yeah, it's tough. Like, a lot of times when things are really hard during service, like when it's a busy day, like I usually say stuff like, it will pass. And it usually does. But in that moment, it's just like,
this too shall pass.
Yeah, how am I going to get through this?
Yeah, I have 100% success rate of getting through these terrible days. Okay, but so you've got to, you know, you spend a lot of time just coaching yourself through it.
Yes.
And is that something that you always had, or is that something that you've had to hone?
I think I got it from my mum. My mum is a tough cookie, if anyone's met her.
I have no doubt. And see, I've never met her because, I mean, you are very much the face of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, but my mum raised my brother and I. She's a single parent. My parents split when I was 7. So she was all she, like, I. All she knows is work. And there's times when I have a breakdown and my mom's message to me is, you have nothing to be sad about. but it's coming from a place where she's a refugee, I guess. And it's just a different context.
Totally.
Yeah.
she would look at that and go, yeah, what are you worried about? Yeah, look, you know, my problems are valid. They are different.
Yes.
But they are different.
Yeah. And, like, I think I get the resilience from my mum.
I can believe that, actually.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I can't believe that I've reached, so this year is my 11th year for Cafe Line. And I'm not going to lie, in those 11 years, there's times when it's dark and it's like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Yeah, but somehow I managed to do it.
Yeah, you keep going. You know, every time I'm wandering through feed, it's, you know, always a smile and always a beautiful meal. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, I tip my hat to you for that because, you know, 11 years of that, 11 years of any business,
yes.
And shit, 11 months of a business is bloody terrible. So to be doing that for so long and to have built, I mean, I would, you know, suggest that you have almost a cult-like form of what you've created. But, you know, we're sort of jumping ahead. I'm going to rewind because you've exited the business in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't you.
Yes.
What happened next?
I've always thought the Burbs would do really well. So that was my gut. Like, I find, like, in the Valley it was really a lot of transient customers. Like, it was just tourists or people going out for a drink or clubbing. Yeah, it wasn't like a repeat customer base, like the locals. So I actually lived in Moorooka when I was researching my lovely spot now. And I went past there like probably for a year and go, yeah, that's the spot. That's the Golden Goose spot.
So you hired it off.
Yeah, I did.
You knew that that was the spot.
Yeah, so prior to my restaurant, it was an Indian restaurant. Yeah, it was called Figueritos. Yeah, but it was like a time warp. Like, there was curtains, carpet, the decor was just probably the same from the 80s. It was, yeah, the owner just hadn't moved with the times. Yeah, and I came in and said, oh, can I actually buy you out? that was how it started.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's fully committed then.
Yeah.
You've decided. You found the place. Yep. You spent a year driving past it going, I think this is it.
Yeah.
And then you pulled the trigger.
Yeah, and at the time my mum didn't believe it. She's like, I can't see through this. And I'm like, you've got to take away all these curtains. And then it is the spot.
But you were able to convince her, obviously.
Yeah, I did.
So how long did that take?
I can't remember. Probably 6 months.
Because you've started the business with her. So it was... Was it just the two of you at that stage, or
yeah,
not your brother as well? Was,
no,
because he was still
in Redlow, in Chinatown.
Yeah, running the business there as well. Wow, and so you've come in, you've decided what you wanted to do. Where did you start? You started by, I guess, attacking the interior. Were you doing that?
Yeah, we did a renovation. Yeah, we stripped it, raised the roof. Yep, and it looked so different. Completely different. So it used to be a butcher, so there was like exposed brick, and then there was like phone numbers. It was great. It was just gave it the charm of the cafe.
Because here's a crazy thing about this information. I discovered when I moved into this building, which is across the road from the restaurant, that when my mum was born, they lived for a time in this building. So you know where the flats are just here?
Yeah.
Next to us? My mum lived here. And then you know where the barbershop is?
Yes.
My great-grandfather ran that barbershop.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Yes.
I didn't know any of this. And I only found out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of coincidences at my shop. So the lady, Tamara Armstrong, who did the mural inside my shop, one day she was just calling her mum and go, oh yeah, I'm doing a mural for a cafe, a Vietnamese cafe in Annerley. And then her mum's like, what street is it on? And she said, Cracknell Road. And she's like, do you know that your auntie used to live there? At the back of the vegetable shop. So it used to be like a veggie shop, like probably in the 50s or something.
And this was it. Yeah. It was in the 50s. And, you know, apparently, yeah, when my mum was born, they lived out the back of the barbershop there. So in that block of shops, and then moved across the road here into the apartment.
Yeah.
And I knew none of this. And, you know, mum's then tracked down a photo of my grandfather working in that barbershop.
Mm.
And, I mean, I was totally spun out. I couldn't believe that, you know, I've set up a business here. What's that? 50, 60 years. 60-something years, years later. And, like, this is, my family was, like, living and working here. It's super weird.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a good spot.
Yeah.
So when did you actually open the restaurant? When did you start accepting customers?
September 2012. Yes.
And this is where I'm going to have that very first question that I asked you. What was Cafe Online to you?
I still remember that day pretty clearly. People were really excited. The night before, I still remember a lady named Marie who walked in the door while I was like on the floor getting the menus together. And she's like, oh, I'm so excited you're opening. I'm like, thank you.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, yeah. There's so many people that day. Yeah, no, it's community. Yeah, and it's a lot of love, Cafe Omai. It's a safe place. Yeah. What I've created with my mum, it's just, I find I'm not being biased, but probably I am, but it just feels different.
It does.
Yeah, there's a vibe, hey.
I can vouch for that. Like, lots of people say this in, you know, their marketing, feel at home.
Yeah.
I'm like, you fucking don't. But you come to Cafe Omai, you do. Like, there's something there. There's something about, you know, obviously your ethos, you know, the style of food, the way that things are presented, the way that your team, you know, interact with you. That's not an accident.
No.
And I guess I'm wondering, because, you know, I have to wildly assume that you know, direct and encourage that. You know, what do you tell them? What's the ethos of it?
It's going to go back to chiropractic now, because I think that having a health background has played a huge part of the way I serve my customers.
Really?
Yeah.
Talk me through that.
It's got a nurturing care kind of vibe. I'm a huge people reader. I can gauge when something's not right. I've had people cry in front of me and I'm like, oh, I didn't intentionally have, yeah, it's just, yeah, people just.
So that, I guess, that connection, the emotional intelligence, those sorts of, I guess, soft skills.
Yes, it's one of those things that you can't train people to have. It's either you got it or you don't. Yeah, that spark, right? Yeah.
I know it. that's my vibe.
Yeah. And, I just care a lot. I care too much sometimes. Like I actually sometimes replay scenarios of incidents that I couldn't. Sometimes customers are not happy sometimes, and then I'm like, did I actually resolve that in a good way, the best way that I could have done? And then the next time I see them, I'm like, oh, sorry about last time and something. And then I don't even remember what you're talking about. But it's probably because I just have.
It's your special place. You want it to be beautiful.
Yeah.
You want everyone to have that experience.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We get that. And with the construction of your menu, has that changed much over those 11 years?
Yeah, it has. It has grew, and I think it's such a broad and big menu. There's times when I want to call it, but I know that if I did, there'll be a riot outside the shop. If I start deleting things that people love, like crackling pork.
Mate. Oh, she's just given away the secret. The crackling pork bun. Do I say it?
Yeah, bun.
No, that is one of the best things I've ever eaten. And when I take people there for the first time, that is quite often the introductory dish that I direct them. And unless, of course, I see them enjoy that.
Yeah, soup.
Or soup is, yeah, as well. Was that trying to say? No, please never get rid of the crackling pork bun, mate. That is one of your gifts to this world.
Yeah, and it's just a fixed menu. So we have specials sometimes. So, yeah, there's times when I, for me to thrive, I feel like I need to be creative. And then that's when there's specials, and then, just to help with, boredom.
So you've got to do something wild.
Yeah, sometimes, but not drastically. I found the reason why things are the way it is at Cafe Mai is with the menu is that it's not about my ego, it's about what the customers want. So there's times when I want to just scrape everything and start again, but my mom's like, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
She's very wise.
Yes. Yeah. You know, like, because sometimes you're bored, you're like, oh, I just want to do something different. But then if it's bringing people in.
This is where the secret menu starts, isn't it?
Yeah, or we can do a pop-up.
Yeah. Do you do some of that? Do you do a bit of...
Sometimes, not really. No, but this year I'm going to try and do that. Nice. Just for me.
Where are you going to pop up? Or is that...
What would I do?
Yeah, what would you... Is it same, totally different?
Oh, something different.
So not Vietnamese food?
It might have some inspiration. But, like, I was thinking of doing a Sunday session, having a soul funk band at the back of the restaurant and calling it, like, Mofo.
Good.
Yeah, like, just really random, and then just having a simple dish. Yeah. There's so many ideas.
You've got to pull the thread. Explore the curiosity.
Yes.
See what happens.
Yes. And the thing is, you've got to just have a date. What a date.
Commit.
Yeah.
Let's just, it's done. Tell people. Let them know. Tell the world, and then it's on, and then you're buggered, and then when you go, what am I doing? And your mum goes, why? You know, oh, this one.
Yeah.
So going forward, what do you see on your journey? What's next?
Wow. Because it's like 11 years, right? And then it's like, what, am I going to do another 9?
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh. Am I forever? and they're probably not going to put you on the spot. But it's because, you know, you have, it's interesting, some of the notes that you sort of hit on, with the community and the family place and the herbs. Like, you've ticked the brief.
Mm.
You know, you've nailed those things. And I certainly think you've got that down to a practice art. And I could see where you'd want to potentially explore more things. And then, obviously, the family businesses alongside. Yeah, it's just interesting to see what you might be thinking or things you'd like to experiment with. Or, you know, if you could just wipe the slate and do whatever you want, what might that look like? In a more theoretical space.
Well, I do want to write a book. That's my next thing. A cookbook.
Where do I buy?
I haven't even published. It's really in the early stages. But it's one of my goals.
I think there would be a lot of people that would be very interested in your cookbook. So that's part of. Is this in the works? Are there a couple of things written down?
It's all in my head at the moment. It's really just. I think it's going to be about me mainly, and about my just portraying all the quirkiness, recipes that I grew up with, and I'm really obsessed with music. So I'm going to incorporate that into my cookbook as well, because I collect records, vinyl.
Oh.
Yeah, so instead of suggested drink list, it's suggested listening.
Ah, so we set the vibe.
Yeah.
And you're there, I would
never
even heard that.
Yeah, no,
that's really cool.
Like dinner party, what are you going to spin and who's going to flip the record? Yeah.
And when you sort of say, okay, so you've got a record collection, how large is this record collection?
It's building. It's not that big. Probably 2 IKEA cubes full.
So it's on its way.
It's on its way.
And what style? Is it a broad style? What's that?
Yeah, it's eclectic, but it's mainly alternative indie 80s stuff. Yes. I'm a huge Joy Division fan. I even have the album cover tattoo on me.
that's a real fan. So there's going to be a cookbook that has musical suggestions.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Yeah.
It's a TV show.
Yeah, and I'm into my colourful dresses because I wear black all day. So when I'm out of work, I usually wear colourful things, big earrings. My hair changes colour all the time.
I have noticed that.
Yes.
These are the tiny little bits of creative expression you can get away with in a black uniform.
Yeah. And I think that having that creative expression at the cafe invites people in to be anything they want. And you don't have to fit in. And I've always had that thing about trying to fit in when I was growing up, and to create that vibe in the venue, I think that's important for people. It's inclusive.
And I appreciate that because I'm just dressed up and I look like I've rolled out of bed most days when I turn up here. Yeah. fashion is not why people would hire me. And I do appreciate that there's no dress code there. Just be you.
Yeah.
Because I always enjoy it. It is funny, though, isn't it, now that I stop and think about it. There's mums with kids and there's people, dressed up in their, savvy business attire.
Yeah.
And then, an alternative look as well.
Or lycra, bikes and lycra, dogs.
High-vis, dogs, whatever you... Yeah, there's no limits to that, is it? It's just not even part of that conversation. Well, I'm very keen to sort of hear what happens next on this cookbook. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, if anyone's a publisher.
I don't think you'd have too much trouble with the show.
Yeah,
I think there'd be some interest in that. Yeah. And look, over those 11 years of running this business, what are some of the things that you've been taken away from it, that you've learned that have changed?
Change me.
You wouldn't be the same person that you are 11 years ago, I have to imagine.
I'm a lot more bolder than 11 years ago. I was pretty introverted and timid back 11 years ago, but now I'm just me.
See, introverted doesn't really strike me in a food service.
I don't know. I think I don't really like the word introvert anyway, because I think most of us are in between, and there's times where we need to be to go within. You know.
It's a good place. Yeah. You've got to be comfortable there to be comfortable anywhere else.
Yeah. A lot gutsy. Like, I used to be really calculated, like afraid. And that with Cafe Amai, like the early days, it was just 40 seats. So we only had the corner. But it was just like there's moments that we had to just take to go to expand, and we had to do it. And then there's a big risk, right? Putting a lot of money into Reno.
Massive.
Yeah. And we had to get a loan. It's a gamble, I guess. But calculated a little, yeah. We're sure we were going to do it right.
And I think that comes out of that self-belief, doesn't it? Sort of fought enough battles and rolled the dice often enough that you go, again, potentially on paper, a bit silly, but I know that this will work. So.
Yeah. And there's belief from my mum, like she was supportive of my, you know, like of the restaurant financially. Like without her, there's always someone helping in the back.
Always.
Always with business. Yeah. So pretty lucky in that regard. What else?
Had your mum changed in that time? Have you seen anything or just same?
I think she's same. My mum's pretty stable. Yeah.
So the whole journey hasn't really made much of a difference.
She's always been a workaholic.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yes and no. Yeah, so my mum used to own a florist in Sydney. That was a long jump, like probably 20 years or so. So I was helping her with that too, growing up. So small business has always been ingrained in me from an early age.
That does seem to be something that I've noticed as I talk to more people over time. Because my father ran his own business as well, and it was all over to you.
Yeah.
And his, oddly, his dream for me was for me to like work for the government so that I didn't have to go through all the stress of small business, because, you know, he went through the MC, roller coaster.
Yeah.
But I used to go into his, like that's where we hung out. You know, if you're on holidays, you're there.
Yes.
The fabrics and wool coverings. And one of our favourite things was the stable gown. I'm not sure which one of the stable gowns.
Yeah, I was helping my mum clean flowers in the holidays.
We weren't helping. Yeah, there's something about that, isn't there? If you grow up around small businesses, but you quite often do see that next generation. Yeah. Just do it yourself.
Yeah. What, be your own boss?
Yeah.
I can't imagine working for someone.
I'd get fired. Especially after this long. I'm not very good at and when I find myself like in corporate world places, I'm like, yeah.
Out of place.
I'm supposed to be. Yeah. Oh, well, Maggie, I'm conscious of your time and I'm grateful that you've come to have a chat with me this afternoon about, you know, yourself and your journey. For people that want to follow you, want to follow your business, how can they keep up with that?
Oh, they're on Instagram and Facebook. Cafe Omai.
Okay, at Cafe Omai?
Yeah, CAFEOMAI.
There we go. We'll throw that in the show notes so people can find it. And that's where, so everything's up on that. So I thought people can see it. And yeah, the restaurant here at Shabby's Corner.
Yeah, the south side.
Right, so good. Southside born and bred. So.
Yeah.
Can't help it. Well, Maggie, I'm going to wrap that up. Thank you so much for coming and having a chat today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's been fun chatting about Cafe Mai. Yeah, and I'll probably see you soon at Cafe Mai for Bar Me.
Hilariously, I've actually got a meeting there tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
So, so I'll be seeing you very soon. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.